Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. If you're getting ready for Christmas, I'm personally just getting ready to bid 2020 good riddance. Simon Calder, the senior travel editor for The Independent in London, will be stopping by with some holiday advice, specifically with some thoughts on the gifts you shouldn't be giving this year. And then I'll talk to the man in the rabbit suit. It's a long story, and I'll let him tell it. Jason Baker from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals and the fight he just won in Egypt. It's an important story. First up, Simon Calder. Joining me now is somebody who helps out a lot of people. One of our regulars on the show, calling in from London. He's the senior travel editor for The Independent with his own special Christmas list, Simon Calder. How are you, sir?
Oh, it's good to talk to you again, Peter. What a year. What a terrible year. And I tell you what, talking of helping people out, I bet that lots of your listeners are looking at the calendar, 20 days till Christmas Day, and thinking, I'd love to give those, my nearest and dearest, my friends, my close, my family, I'd love to give them the gift of travel. How marvellous. Something that will provide them with a bit of hope and inspiration, allow them to go off and explore. And that's a wonderful idea, but please don't. And this is what I've been trying to help people with on this side of the Atlantic this week. Please don't give a travel voucher. I can think of no good reasons for giving them, and I can think of plenty of good reasons for not giving them. And they love you on Christmas Day, 6 months time, when they're trying to redeem that voucher, they're gonna start cursing you. They are, Peter.
Oh, they're gonna hate you. They're gonna hate you. You know what? Anybody listening to the show who's got a travel voucher as a result of the pandemic, you already know the boat that you're in. It's sinking a little bit because the clock is ticking, because the voucher is based on the day you originally bought your ticket, not the day you were supposed to fly. So Simon's advice is well taken and I hope well heeded. So Simon, all right, you're not going to buy anybody a travel voucher, but what are you going to give?
I'm going to give them a promise. This whole problem, and it's going to come to really, really start biting this problem. People, of course, can give travel gift vouchers, and I would advise you not to, because there's so many people, I reckon, across the US, probably around about $20 billion, maybe $30 billion in vouchers. These have been provided by the airlines, by the cruise firms, by the hotels. People accepting them instead of actual cash, sometimes because they're incentivized to do so with a bonus. Otherwise, maybe because the airline just said, you can't have your cash back, but we will give you a voucher. And what we're going to see, and I think this is going to start probably in the new year, is people who have, maybe they booked their trip in January 2020. And they're going to find that actually they've got to redeem this voucher by January 2021, and you're going to get something which I call voucherflation, which is simply, you know in travel, the price of everything is dependent on other people's demand for it. You're going to see the cost of just absolutely mainstream airfares, hotel stays, cruises just go through the roof as people try to use their vouchers before they, as we would put it, use it or lose it. And of course, exactly. Talking of losing it as well, if the company goes out of business, as very sadly, as you've reported, many, many companies have done, then they're going to be taking your money with you. You will become an unsecured creditor, and good luck with that.
Exactly. I sound like a real We're going to start on a down note, then you're going to uplift us. But keep in mind that we've lost this year alone 34 separate airlines. We're not talking about airlines that are operating under bankruptcy and still flying. We're talking about airlines that are no longer existing. They're gone. Yeah. And airlines that are still existing aren't just parking planes. They're retiring them. So it's a little sad for a lot of people this year who are loyal, dedicated workers of the airlines who've been furloughed. About 50,000 people in this country have been furloughed. That's not a happy Christmas. So we have to figure out a way around that. So give me something good to look forward to, Simon.
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, look, I mean, as you know, you've reported on this for decades. We're living in a time of fantastic, flourishing competition. So therefore, don't say to somebody, I'm going to give you a voucher for airline X so you can go to Hawaii. Just give them a beautiful card with effectively your own gift card, which says, I will sometime in 2021 pay for your trip to Hawaii. But of course, you're free to choose the airline that appears to be offering the best deal, the best timings, stay in the hotel that you want to stay in rather than a particular chain. And that way, the person you are giving the gift to, and sure, you don't know exactly where how much it's going to come into. But of course, if they're close to you, they'll do everything they can to keep the overall cost down. That is a really inspiring thing, or something really straightforward.
Sadly, yeah. Simon, sadly, I didn't get your card yet.
But it doesn't need to be a great vacation in Hawaii. You can just do something like, I very much hope that that 2021 is going to be the year that the railroads come back. So if you live in a city with a railroad connection, just say to somebody, I'm going to get you a rail trip from here. You choose your destination. Tell me when you want to go. I'll sort it out for you. Or indeed, of course, something maybe a weekend in the next state. I can't tell you how much I'm missing not being with you in Natchez, Mississippi. What a wonderful part of the world it is. I haven't explored nearly enough. I want to get into the bayou. I want to explore everything I can, all the more so because of this year. So give people hope, give people inspiration, but give them promises rather than vouchers of dubious commercial value.
Well, give them a promise you can actually keep as opposed to a voucher that's got a time limitation on it and may decrease in value. That's
yeah. I've just been looking at the conditions for one of my favorite airlines, genuinely, Ryanair, biggest budget airline in Europe.
Wait a second. Wait, stop right there. Wait, you're telling me that Ryanair is one of your favorite airlines?
Oh, no, it's not one of them. I would probably say if you twisted my arm, Peter, I'd say my favorite airline. Safest in the world in terms of the number of people flown with no fatalities, lower fares than anyone else in Europe, on time. They don't have a great reputation for customer service, but I was
waiting to get to that. Yeah.
Yeah, but look, I mean,
I know you. I know you'll show up there with a backpack and a half a sandwich, and you'll be okay. I know you.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Yes. But you know the holy trinity of aviation: first, safety; second, price; third, punctuality. That's all there is to it, isn't it?
And don't forget the half sandwich.
Very on them. So. But I have been very, very highly trained by the rules. It's over 25 years since I first flew on Ryanair, and they've trained me well. But anyway, sorry, I certainly wouldn't recommend anybody buys that. I certainly recommend people fly on Ryanair maybe when they're over in Europe. My flights this fall have been typically $10-$20 each. But they have all kinds of conditions applied. They charge you a couple of bucks just for selling you a gift voucher, which is going to restrict you to them. They allow you to book flights for other people, but one of those people traveling must be you. They don't allow you to change the name, however much you pay. And so travel is a wonderful gift, but don't be persuaded that this is the way to reward those you love the most deeply, because you never know, they might stop loving you quite so much when they're desperately thinking, hey, we could have gone on airline X.
We've been talking to the senior travel editor of The Independent in London, Simon Calder. Wish I could see you in person, but the quarantine is still in effect. Hopefully that'll end next year. I'll be able to come across the pond, as they say, and see you. You know, one of the things that I wish for Christmas is more transparency in advertising, more transparency in telling the truth about your condition, whatever that condition is, a hotel, an airline, a cruise line, and then involving more and more of your customers in the actual process so they can actually appreciate the product.
Right. Tell me more. I mean, surely we've been used as travelers to the big corporations telling us what we want.
Oh, yeah. But what I'm talking about, Simon, is, you know, you go to a hotel and, you know, they put the little card on your bed saying, you know, please let us know if you don't want us to wash your sheets. Yeah. I love the hotel that comes to me and goes, hey, listen, let me take you down to the laundry and show you what one of our big washing machines looks like, and you'll understand.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden I go, I get it now. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be the king of phosphates. You know, I just think
absolutely.
That, you know, because we're coming into another year where we'd like to think that people are still focused on things like responsible travel, sustainable travel, things that we sort of lost sight of in the last 9 months because of the pandemic.
Yeah, of course, an awful lot of good things have happened to the planet. I mean, we were talking earlier about how very sadly airlines have been retiring aircraft. And I know that you and I will see the last British Airways 747 jumbo jet flying off into the sunset to, I believe, Victorville, California, the air aviation graveyard. And we'll feel sad. But actually, from a planet's point of view, I mean, what British Airways has been doing is running effectively the equivalent of, I don't know, a 1994 Oldsmobile, because it's all paid for. And yeah, the uses a lot of gas, creates quite a lot of noise and exhaust. People seem to be happy and you just pay for it. And
although in the Christmas spirit, Simon, what is British Airways also doing? And this to me is sort of, it's sentimental, but it's also sad. They've been selling off the silverware.
Of course they have. Yeah. You've got to sell everything. Why not? I mean, the first class isn't necessarily dead, but there's going to be an awful lot less of it because, of course, I mean, one of the things that is going to benefit the planet is that there is not going to be so much real estate on an aircraft devoted to the premium classes, to first class, to business class, even to premium economy. Those kinds of products, which have been largely bankrolled by corporations rather than individual leisure travelers, they're just going to shrink. And that's good because, you know, if you pack more people onto an aircraft, the impact per person is lower. But back to your original example, I absolutely agree about that hotel. And one of the things I really like doing on cruise ships is having a word with one of the officers and just say, look, I'm really interested in just kind of understanding a bit more about how this works, how the kitchens work, how the boiler room works, just getting to know how this works. So next time you're on any kind of cruise ship, or indeed, as you say, in a hotel, just say, well, you know, I'd love to find out more. And very often I find that they are absolutely flattered to know that you care and you're interested in their daily lives.
Listen, one of my favorite things to do on a cruise ship is to get a tour in the galley when it's busy, not when it's empty. A tour of the bridge when they're coming into port, when it's busy, not when it's empty. Ooh, and I have to correct you on one thing, Simon. You don't ask about the boiler room. It's the engine room.
The boiler room goes
back to the Titanic.
Thank you. Okay. But I would imagine that there's possibly an advantage to being Peter Greenberg when you're saying, I want to be in the middle of the kitchen just as the start of the
dinner. Well, you know what, though? It's not about that. You ask any chef in a land-based restaurant, hey, can I come see the kitchen? Yeah, come at 3 o'clock when there's nobody here. Who wants to do that? I want to see it when they're going absolutely out of their minds at 7:15 on the line with people juggling trays and glasses and stuff coming hot out of the oven. That's how you understand if the restaurant works or not, when they're under stress.
Yeah, exactly. And you can tell who's keeping up and who isn't. But I've been on, as I know you have, a few I've been on a few expedition ships in the Arctic, in the Antarctic. And my goodness me, those people earn their keep. And
they certainly do.
Kind of easier to kind of get behind the scenes with them.
Well, how about this? Try serving a meal traveling to the Antarctic through the Drake Passage. Any waiter that can serve a meal going through the Drake Passage on one of those ships, I mean, basically probably now works for Cirque du Soleil. I mean, it's unbelievable what these guys can do and what these women can do. It's a balancing act that is really hard to match and quite an interesting ballet. And then that's when you want to see it happening, not when the sea is calm, but you know, it's like going to see the juggler during a rough sea. It's like, that's entertainment. My thanks to Simon. The next time you visit Thailand, you might be lured to visit an elephant sanctuary. But just because it's called a sanctuary, is it really doing good work? If you're in Cairo and headed to the pyramids, are you tempted to go horseback riding out in the desert in Giza? Well, that won't be happening anymore. Just two of the stories I'll get into with Jason Baker from PETA. And yes, he'll explain the rabbit suit. When you travel as much as I do, sometimes you take a lot of things for granted. Sometimes you see things and look at it in not the proper perspective. And what am I referring to? The treatment of animals overseas. Whether it's elephants in India, or horses in Egypt, or mammals. I mean, there's just so many things to talk about that do need to be changed. And at the forefront of that is PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And recently, they were able to get some really great changes done in Cairo. Now, it's interesting for me because I've been going to Egypt for 40 years. And when I first went there, one of my great thrills was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, getting out to the stables in Giza, getting on a horse, and riding out into the desert to watch the sunrise come over the pyramids. It was probably my best photo op moment. It was emotional. I'll never forget it. However, and where the however comes in, is with our next guest, Jason Baker. Jason was recently basically strategic involved in getting the rules changed, not just for the horses, but for the camels. And Jason, to be able to do that in Egypt, where those animals are a huge source of income, was not an easy task.
No, it wasn't. You know, for some background, we had been getting complaints. This we did this investigation documenting the treatment of horses and camels there last year. And we'd been getting complaints just so often. And I had been there myself. And I have been going to Egypt as well for 20 years, and I love it. But we were asked to look sort of behind the scenes, look at what's going on the side roads, look under the saddles even. And so what we found was it was animals who had no food or water all day long, out there in the burning sun. And when these exhausted animals fell down, they would literally just be beaten mercilessly until they got up. And we documented this over and over. And what we did was we always try to give a solution. So we put together ideas of how they could change the park. And we took the video that we documented and these ideas, and we went to the Ministry of Tourism. And to be honest, you know, they were pretty silent. But we said specifically we need, even just even as a tourist, having been there and having knowing how to get around, it would be better if there was a hop-on, hop-off electric bus that could take you to the different spots in Giza. So that's what we put in. That's what we thought was best. And 2 weeks ago, they announced that they're changing. They're getting the animals out of the park. And I actually think this is not only big news for the Middle East, but just specifically for Egypt, more people are going to want to go when they know there's not this abuse, when they know it's easier. It was just a smart, I think, economic move that also is helping animals a lot.
And congratulations on that. It's great for the animals. And of course, you've got to basically repurpose the people who own the animals so that they have some kind of revenue to be able to understand on their own that there's another way to do these things, right?
Right, exactly. And that's why I think they're changing more in the park. But what's going to happen is when you make it more tourist friendly, there's more jobs. We know that from other places we've worked in too. And so I think that the country's changing. It's developing. Using animals to pull carts is going away. And so it's changing to electric carts. It's changing to different modes, still within the park where people can make money. And I think this is only a positive change for the economics and for the animals.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. And then, there was the experiences that I've had in India, in Sri Lanka, and in Thailand. I remember going to Thailand in 1986, and it was not considered unusual at all for the hotels to bring elephants into the lobby of the hotels or in front of the hotels to give people rides. And I'm sure we've all seen the pictures, which is really sad, of the elephant that was being used to paint pictures on the streets of Bangkok. Mm-hmm. And once again, you know, we did see the start of elephant sanctuaries, but it gets down to a different definition of terms, I think, as to what constitutes a sanctuary. If I'm going to go to a sanctuary, does that mean I'm going to a sanctuary to ride an elephant? I don't think so. Do you?
Right. I mean, so I remember these times 20 years ago, 30 years ago, too, when an elephant was on every tour, and it has changed. And a lot of that has to do with tourists demanding change, people speaking with their wallets. And I can't stress that enough. That's been the push in change. But yeah, you have to look. I mean, and it's a good thing, I think, that they're seeing elephant sanctuary as a marketing tool. Now, a lot of them are fake. So yeah, you do have to look. If they're using bull hooks, don't go. If they're offering rides, don't go. If they're letting you even wash them, don't go. There are some good elephant sanctuaries there. There's one Boon Lot Elephant Sanctuary. I think people should Google it and look it up because it's amazing. They have a year waiting list because you basically go to just this peaceful oasis with elephants. It's an amazing trip. And there's a few other ones. But yeah, I mean, people are always going to try to trick you. They're always going to try to tell you whatever you want to hear to get your money. So ask some questions. Look into it. If you think you've been tricked, contact PETA. You know, we'll look into it. We'll see how we can change or we can push. The changes are happening, though. So it is good. There are companies there's companies like, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was saying we've seen the changes happening slowly but definitely. That's palpable change in countries like Thailand. What about India and Sri Lanka?
Yeah, they're moving slower, much slower. There is a real problem with elephants in Sri Lanka. There's not a great program. We are trying to work with some people right now. I just, in fact, read some emails this morning because they're encroaching. The cities are encroaching on their natural habitat, and so it's causing some human elephant conflicts. Similar with India, part of it has to do with corruption, but there is one decent sanctuary for elephants there, and the animal welfare laws are good. The problem is there's just no strong penalties. It's a dollar or two to break animal welfare violations there. So there's progress.
I'm reminded in Thailand of a law that was well-intentioned that basically said you couldn't own a hotel with more than, let's say, 60 rooms without providing housing for your employees, without providing for gray water and black water, recycling systems, et cetera, et cetera. And then you'd see these 300-room hotel resorts pumping raw sewage into the bay. And how are they allowed to get out away with that? Because they took those 300 units and sold them off in parcels of 59 units each so they could get around the law. So we really have to also focus, as you say, on the enforcement and the interpretation of the law.
It's true. And I have to really go back to the tourist dollar, too, because what really puts them in their place is when tourists won't go, when they won't pay for it, when they tell their hotel that they didn't like something that happened, or their tour guide. This Egypt victory comes after nearly 500,000 emails went to the Ministry of Tourism. So they are listening. And now we're having to look at Petra, because they're feeling tons of pressure from what Egypt has done. Because they have this, this 4.5 mile walk to these 900 steps where they have donkeys carrying people.
The donkeys. And those donkeys, I have to tell you, they're the hardest working donkeys I've ever seen.
They are the hardest working donkeys.
They really are. I hope you succeed in that as well, because I think there's some lessons to be learned there. We're talking to Jason Baker from PETA. Jason, when we come back, one of the things I want to open up with you is, how we can vote with our wallets, how we can make our voices heard, not just when we travel to Asia or Africa or South America or Asia, to any of those locations, but also within the United States. We have a lot of problems we got to solve here as well. So when we come back, I want you to think about that. And then also, are there places that are doing a great job, like the elephant sanctuary you mentioned in Thailand, that we can visit and we can immerse ourselves in and learn from in the United States? Because when I went back to Asia about a year ago, there were 5 or 6 different sanctuaries that were recommended to me. And quite frankly, they all sounded great. And it was only when a friend of mine, it wasn't me, it was a friend of mine, that said, hold on a second, let me do some additional checking. We ended up ruling 4 of them out because it was so touristic that all the concerns that you had about the treatment of animals were just not being followed.
I hear you. I'm glad you did that.
Well, I'm glad my friend did that. he woke me up. We've been speaking to Jason Baker, the Senior Vice President at PETA. Jason, before I go any further, I have to ask you about the rabbit costume.
The rabbit costume. That was something, it was a while ago. I followed Al Gore around when he had this ridiculous animal testing program that he wanted to do, which was going to torture millions of animals. And so everywhere he went, I went on his election campaign. At one point, I think I showed up at a small airport in Virginia, and the Secret Service walked over and said, okay, who's Jason Baker? And you, at that point, it's probably not a good sign when the Secret Service is asking for you by name.
Well, and they knew you were the rabbit.
Yep, they did. They did. So
what happened? But you actually got him to change, didn't you?
We did. So it was originally, I think, supposed to be about 4 million animals. And from pressure from PETA, it was brought down to somewhere around 80,000 animals. Still not good, but the pressure worked. It was really poorly thought out. A lot of companies were fighting it. There was politics involved, so companies couldn't speak up like we could. It ended in a partial victory and forever known as the Rabbit Boy.
Okay, Rabbit Boy, where's the costume today?
I think that has long since been buried. When you work for PETA, doing silly things to grab people's attention, it's just sort of the everyday. So the reality is, I dressed as a priest in Mexico City. I dressed in diapers in Atlanta. I dressed as Cupid in Boston. My level of self-respect is not very high. So
the man with no shame, Jason Baker. All right.
Yeah.
All right, but now let's get serious for a second, because we're back in the U.S. now. We talked about what was going on in Egypt, what was going on in Asia, what was going on in parts of the Middle East. What about the United States? What do we need to know about as we travel across this country? Because as you can imagine, especially during the pandemic, most of us are not going to be going overseas. We're going to stay within the 48 continental United States. So what do we need to know?
Well, there's a few things. If you see a roadside zoo, just keep on driving. Leave them alone. The level of violations that PETA goes through, there may be some fantasies about Tiger King, but the reality is that PETA has been prosecuting most of those facilities in that show, and facilities like it around the country. So the biggest thing is don't use your wallet to support these terrible places. Keep going. But you have to be an educated consumer, and you had talked before about these sanctuaries that were recommended to you. You really do have to use Google. I mean, even I do it, and I have these huge resources with PETA behind me. But before I go to a place, I check it out. I see if these things seem legit, because there is a marketing these days to tell you what you want. We call it greenwashing. They just make everything sound eco-friendly and animal-friendly, and it may not. So you keep on moving. You look at travel sites. Expedia has done a lot to get rid of bad animal attractions, both in the United States and around the world. The world's biggest travel site is called Sea Trip. It's China-owned. They've gotten rid of a lot of terrible attractions as well. So yeah, you educate yourself. You don't go to SeaWorld because they're not there to help animals. You look. Most states have some kind of an animal sanctuary, and they'll have events, and they'll have that you can go to, and they're fun. And I take my son to them. They're usually designed for the family, and they're nearby.
Now, of course, Jason, Ringling Brothers is no longer with us. I don't know of any other major traveling circuses that are out there anymore, and that's largely, of course, because of a lot of the work that you did.
Yeah, we had a campaign going against Ringling Brothers for 20 years. There's also just been a whole level of education, of teaching people what is happening to these animals, tigers who live in cages, as they go from city to city. They don't get to do things that are natural. They don't get to live with their young. So as that has been a sea change. It's resulted in people not wanting to. They want to go to Cirque du Soleil instead. And Cirque du Soleil has been, and those types have really benefited from from the animal-free tourism and animal-free shows, and we continue to push that.
Although I have to tell you something, Jason, I don't know if you know this, but the performers at Cirque du Soleil, they're forced to live in cages. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
No, but I mean, the pandemic has done a lot to change things. That Cirque du Soleil is suffering right now, too.
Yes, they are.
One of my hopes in looking at these attractions in the U.S. and around the world is that there is some retooling being done, and that they take this time, and I think some are. I think what has happened in Egypt is a result of thinking, okay, we're not going to have a lot of tourists for the next year, so let's knock some stuff down, rebuild the roads. I think that potentially that's going to happen in Petra. I'm hoping that Thailand is doing that. I'm hoping that a lot of attractions in the U.S. are doing that.
My thanks to Jason and to Simon Calder. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For interviews with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for breaking travel news, and there's no shortage of that, just log on to petergreenberg.com. If you like Eye on Travel with Peter Greenberg, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover
inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.